Thank you very much, Padmadaka. Good morning to you all. Good to see a nice gathering in the shrine room. Now, I have to admit that when I was first getting into Buddhism, getting into the Dharma, I have to say I didn't find Zen at all attractive. Early on, very early on in my involvement, so when I was about 17, one of the first retreats I went on was a day retreat, what was called a seshin. This is a Japanese word, I think, which means something like searching the heart. And this was a day of meditation, silent meditation, silent walking, a day in a shrine room, never leaving the shrine room except to answer the calls of nature, held in a house in Brighton, where I was first going along to things. And the teacher was a Japanese Zen monk, Zen teacher, who regarded himself as a Zen master. In fact, he regarded himself as a Buddha. He was quite upfront about that. He was enlightened. And he sat in full lotus in a purple robe in front of the shrine, which seemed a bit odd to me, with his shaved head, looking very severe, sitting, you know, very erect, like a mountain, very wonderful posture, very powerful. And there was no instruction at all. We just had to sit, and the master would occasionally say from time to time, no need to do anything. No need to do anything. You just had to sit, apparently. For me, that meant sitting in a lot of discomfort, trying to sit in full lotus. There was no instruction in posture or anything like that. And at lunchtime, we had a lunch, a kind of formal lunch, sitting cross-legged in the shrine room. And unfortunately, the people who were running the weekend had not really thought about the lunch perhaps as well as they could have, because there were a lot of crisps and celery. And the room was made of wood. And the friend I was with, we were young and foolish. We really started to get the giggles because we were feeling a lot of tension. And as we into our celery and crisps and, you know, people eating very mindfully, perhaps it was one of those Zen moments. But I couldn't relate to this at all. It was too severe, too plain, probably, in fact, just too subtle for me. And it really put me off. I was much more attracted to Indo-Tibetan Buddhism, which seemed to be very full and rich, something you could really engage with. And, well, really, actually, just simply Buddhism. The Buddhism, the Dharma, the kind of non-denominational, ecumenical Buddhism, based very much on the teachings of the Buddha that I was learning from Sangharakshita and his disciples. I found that much more attractive, something I could really get to grips with, really get engaged with. In a way, it was quite ordinary and straightforward. There was clear instruction, you could do something, there was something to practice. There was a notion of growth and development and of service of the Dharma, of Buddhism. Zen seemed to me like cold tea leaves and clever words. I did read early on Sangharakshita's book, The Essence of Zen, which I'd recommend actually, which shed some light on the subject. And I noticed in his lectures, his tape lectures, which I used to listen to a lot, there were lots of references to Chan, Chinese word for Zen, Chan and Zen, mainly in the form of stories as well as teachings, very vivid stories. And he tells them very well. One story in particular had a very big effect on me, the chess game. Well worth checking out the chess game. That's a great Zen story. I won't tell it again because I'm sure most of you know it. But check out the chess game. Very, very good story. And it really made the point about the necessity for concentration and loving kindness, compassion, very, very well. And I noted as well that Sangharakshita himself was obviously deeply inspired by the Zen tradition. He said that his first Buddhist texts, which he came across when he was 16, were the Diamond Sutra, an Indian Buddhist text, which had a huge impact on Chan and Zen, and the Sutra of Huineng, the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch, a hugely important Chinese work which gives the life and teachings of the great Huineng. When he read these at 16, when he read the Diamond Sutra, he realized that he was a Buddhist, and he always had been a Buddhist, since the beginningless beginning. Well, not his phrase, but that's what he meant. And when he read the Sutra of Huineng, he said he read it in a kind of ecstasy, whenever he read it, a kind of ecstasy, just delighting in this text. And it really is a very delightful and very profound text, the Sutra of Huineng, telling the story of how the sixth patriarch Huineng came in contact with the Dharma and how he became a great teacher, very naturally and spontaneously. So Sangharakshita obviously had this feeling for Zen, and part of his, when he was in India, up in Kalimpong, practicing and teaching and studying, he didn't just study with Tibetan lamas. He also had a teacher who taught him a lot about meditation and Buddhist philosophy, who was a Chinese hermit named Mr. Chen, who lived in a tiny room above Kalimpong Bazaar, spending most of his time, most hours of the day, meditating, just with a little break to give some lectures to Sangharakshita and a friend of his, just two people at the lecture, and a little break to write a book, books, 20 minutes a day. And he wrote book and quite a lot of books doing 20 minutes a day. And Mr. Chen was a great... There are his book, Buddhist Meditation, Systematic and Practical, is a fabulous survey, an unsurpassed survey of Buddhist meditational practices and methods and disciplines throughout the whole of the Buddhist tradition. And there is indeed a chapter on Chan, on Zen. And he communicated a lot of that to Sangharakshita, that teaching about the different kinds of Chan, of Zen that I mentioned last night. Tathagata Chan, Patriarchal Chan, Offspring Chan. That comes from Mr. Chen and his teacher. There's a deep feeling there in Sangharakshita for the Chan and Zen tradition.